crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Nadkami, and Chris Herring.
Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. I'm Rohan Nadkami, joined today by my close personal friend, New York Times best-selling author of the book Blood in the Garden, Spike Lee's friend, Chris Herring, as well as former Celtics ball boy, Chris Mannix. Guys, the NBA Finals have ended. A pretty awesome Game 5, all things considered, but the Nuggets pulling away from the Heat at the very end there for a 94-89 win, their first championship in their 47-year history. In the NBA, Nikola Jokic unsurprisingly named Finals MVP. Mannix, let's start with you, our man on the scene in Denver. Just tell us a little bit about what it was like after the game, what the celebration was like. I'm curious. We did not. There was no small talk before this podcast. What was the mood like in Denver? How would you compare it to other championship clinchers you've seen?
It was comparable. It was loud, certainly, inside the arena. And, you know, when I, you know, kind of watched the faces of each of the key players, you sort of saw a variety of different things. I found it amusing that Nikola Jokic's instinct after the game was not to, you know, point to the heavens or jump up and down, but to congratulate quite literally every one of the Miami Heat players afterwards. Then when he was done with that, he kind of looked around like, what do I do next? You know, the emotion on Jamal Murray's face was real. The emotion on Michael Porter Jr.'s face was real. Both those guys, you know, went through a lot to get to this point. Physically, you know, had to train their bodies to get to this point. So, yeah, I mean, like it was up there with every kind of celebration you've heard in buildings past for championships. I just thought how each of these players responded was most interesting, because in the case of Murray, you know, this is, I mean, look, ACL tears, we look at them differently now than we did 10, 15, 20 years ago. But, you know, there was a point in the last couple of years where Jamal Murray really wondered if he would ever get it back, if he would ever, you know, be the player he was on track to be. So when you saw him kind of crouch down and the emotion overwhelm him, you know, talking to him a little bit after the game, that is what was kind of running through his mind. That was what he was feeling in that moment, the relief that he had finally made it all the way back.
Herring, one thing that's really stood out to me about this series, now pace has helped with this a lot, but the Nuggets in all four of their wins held the Heat to under 100 points. And now again, that doesn't mean every single one was kind of an incredible defensive performance. Game five was. Game five was Denver winning the kind of ugly game I think a lot of people never expected them to be able to win during the playoffs. Herring, what did you make of kind of Denver's style of play in this playoffs? And what do you see as kind of sustainable for them in playoffs moving forward?
Well, I think what's so interesting about Denver just generally is, it's easy to say now that we can all, you know, we all remember like 2 weeks, with 2 weeks left in the regular season, that like every contender in the West had like a flaw. Mm-hmm. And with Denver's, I feel like we were more than anything trying to kind of find one for them. Everybody else had a really obvious one. The Warriors were terrible on the road. The Lakers were still a pretty new team. Even though they, you know, they had been winning towards the end of the season. Memphis, pick your poison. You know, it was the injuries, but it was obviously the John Morant stuff as well. The Kings had never been there. So there were so many, you know, the Suns and Kevin Durant. The Nuggets, when I really think back on it, it was that they were a pretty average team defensively. And that, you know, really that they struggled a little bit in March. And, you know, they were losing teams to teams that they had no business losing to. But, you know, if you go back and look at it, and Mannix was there, so maybe they got into this a little bit, maybe they didn't, who knows. They might have just been bored, to be honest with you. They were relatively healthy this season. They got a chance to play through their growing pains. Michael Malone, I think, I wouldn't necessarily say to a fault, but if it was to a fault, it was during a time of the season where the Nuggets were allowed to make mistakes, where he was letting Jamal Murray handle the ball and take the last shots in games where he was really struggling. And I think it was a means of trying to get his confidence back from the stuff that Mannix was talking about. It was a team that had a weakness. They were not a great rim protection team for a number of reasons. It's not really Jokic's strength, but it wasn't a fatal flaw. And frankly, when you look at who they played, for all the jokes and all the comments that have been made about how easy a path they had, they played against some great players on this run, and they had the most difficult offense in the league to defend because they were so balanced. Because if you took Jokic away in one regard, he could still beat you in another. I mean, you know, he had a 53-point game against the Suns. Like, that's not, first of all, it's difficult to do that even if a team is forcing you to try to beat them through your scoring. But there's just so many other guys on this roster. The depth that this roster had, whether it was Christian Brown stepping up or Bruce Brown stepping up, Jeff Green making plays, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope leaving the game and coming back, Aaron Gordon just dominating guys in the post and also holding up his end defensively with Jimmy Butler. There wasn't a better team in the league top to bottom this year. I think for a lot of the season, we assumed that the Celtics, the Bucks, they didn't even make it here. And the team that knocked them out was really no match for this Nuggets team. They took one game in the series, and quite frankly, if I'm being totally honest, and I'm saying this without a bias, I don't care. Miami,
you better be even, careful. You better be careful about what you're about to say.
You care more than I care about this. Miami got gifted a couple of calls yesterday that, like, quite frankly, I was kind of happy that Denver was able to finish the series yesterday, because that 3-point shot foul that Butler got, if you think it was a foul, if you didn't, I didn't want to see them win a game that has the chance to throw that series into flux when one team so clearly was better than the other. And that's no fault of Miami's necessarily. Like, they deserve to be there. They fought hard. They played hard, which to me, the way that they played and competed in that game where they could have just laid down, to some extent, that's Heat culture. They were playing in the altitude. This is a tough game. Nothing was falling for them at the basket. They played hard, but Denver was just a wrecking ball. And led by Jokic, they won in different ways. Michael Porter gave them nothing as a three-point shooter in the series. He stepped up yesterday in all sorts of other ways that a lot of people did not think he could. So I'm really happy for them. I'm really happy for their fan base. But it was a team that had enough chameleon aspects to them that they could win in different ways, and they showed it all throughout this playoffs.
Absolutely. And just kudos to Denver, like you said, winning in different ways. I thought that was the most impressive thing to me about Game 5, just the fact that they were able to win that defensive slugfest, ugly foul game. I want to talk a little bit about something Mannix actually wrote about this week, which is the Denver Nuggets, kind of their dynasty potential. Do we see this team winning multiple titles? Let me start here, because I think something that we've seen, or something that I think will typically happen in the NBA, right or wrong, there's usually some kind of reaction to a team that wins the championship, right? There's usually some kind of reaction to, well, we're going to need to have to figure out how to slow down this player if we want to win a championship. We assume we'll have to go through them at some point. I think if you're in the Western Conference, especially, you have to consider, what is our plan for the Jokic-Jamal Murray two-man game if we have to play it in the playoffs? I do think that that's something that's going to have to be on the back of mind of teams. But Mannix, let me start with you. Do you agree with that notion? Do you think there's going to have to be some element of every team in the West is looking at how do we slow down Jamal and Joker in the playoffs? Or do you think teams are kind of looking at this like, if we had been healthy, you know, if XYZ had happened, maybe we're not so worried about Denver? What do you think?
No, I think they have to take that mindset. And I think it's more than just stopping that two-man game, because I think in the years to come, assuming Michael Porter Jr.'s back holds up, he's going to be even better. I think Aaron Gordon, with another year under his belt in that role, is going to be better. I mean, these are not guys, you know, that frankly are even approaching the age of 30. I mean, Jokic is 28, Gordon's 27, everybody else is younger. So there's room to grow organically on this roster. And when you look at the guys on the even younger tier, I mean, Christian Brown is is going to look. That guy was an impact player in the finals, and he's only going to get better in the years to come. So yeah, I think there's going to be an offseason spent, you know, kind of zeroing on in a ways they can slow that specific part of the game down. But I think Denver's so much, much more than that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far, look, their dynasty potential, you know, it's not like just us bringing it up. Like the first thing Michael Malone said when he was interviewed by ABC or ESPN, whatever aired it, was, you know, we want more. And when he got to the post-game press conference, he answered a question that I don't necessarily think was about dynasties with, you know, something Pat Riley once said about a team becoming a dynasty. So this is on the forefront of the mind of people in Denver. And look, going into next season, they're going to be the favorite. Like, I think that's fair to say. Mm-hmm. Their starting five is back. They're going to lose Bruce Brown. Like, that's just the way it goes. Even Bruce Brown kind of knows it. Like, everybody on the team was like, Bruce Brown's going to get paid, and Bruce Brown's talking about getting paid.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, he
completely deservedly so.
I think he told our buddy Mike Singer last night that he would like to stay. Money isn't everything, but I bet players say a lot of things when the champagne is flowing.
Yeah, I think money.
Bobby Portis stayed, to his credit, a guy that like had a huge playoff run.
You're noting the exception and not the rule.
Totally. No, I'm right there with you on that. I'm not trying to say that he's going to stay no matter what, but he's a big part of that team.
He's a big part of that team, but look, I would expect him to get anywhere from $15 to $20 million per year, depending how crazy teams get in the off season. And look, we know the deal. Denver can't offer more than $7.7 million in a new deal. It would just be just such a big risk for Bobby Brown to take, or Bobby Brown, Bruce Brown. You said Bobby Portis.
Sorry.
But it would be such a big risk for him to take. Yeah. And, you know, it just, and that's why I think Denver is going to be banking pretty hard on Christian Brown.
Right.
And,
I mean, and they're others. Big on Peyton Watson.
Yeah, Peyton Watson. And look, they went out and look, they quietly did that deal. With Oklahoma City, that got them an extra first round pick in next year's draft because they know what their situation is. They've got to, you know, find ways to get cheap talent and make it work. So the pressure is going to be on that front office led by Calvin Booth to find those types of guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say one thing, real quick interjection. I'm fascinated to see how contending teams start to navigate this new CBA. And I am fascinated at the idea of contenders kind of being forced to work in first round picks. Herring, let me go to you though. What do you think? Do you think this is the kind of team that could is capable of going on a run? Like Mannix mentioned, they've also been pretty upfront about this, Malone. It was one of the first things he said last night. Herring, what do you kind of make of their ability to maybe pull off a couple here with Joker at the helm?
I mean, first off, just that basic question without any other context of, do they have a generational enough player to do that? Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I think what I'm happiest about is that we can move past this debate, this question that I think was kind of a bottom feeder's question of like, is Jokic that good? You can't win two straight MVPs, arguably deserving of a third, without being that good. And so he answered that question. I think he answered a lot of questions defensively too. He was massive defensively in that game yesterday. It's not the traditional way we think about a center and the way they defend and the impact they make. We can agree on that. He's not the most athletic player. He would be the first to tell you that. He's admitted that to me multiple times in conversations. That's not the point. But his offensive talent and his ability to get by and sometimes really impact the game defensively is enough to win them multiple championships if you have the right players around him. Jamal Murray is obviously one of those guys that, you know, should spend his whole career alongside Nikola Jokic. I think it's a question here of what do the other teams around the league do? I think, you know, to my confusion, the Lakers waited till really, really, really late in the game to make trades that, you know, Mannix picked them to come out of the West. They actually could have maybe done it had they made moves sooner and gelled sooner to be able to put up a little bit more of a fight against a team like the Nuggets. Would they have beaten them? We don't know that. But they looked good and cohesive. And if they're healthy and they're playing from the standpoint of a higher seed. It's a big question with how old LeBron is, with Anthony Davis's health, obviously. But when you look at that, when you look at a team like the Suns, if they go out and retool, let's say the Suns have an offseason like the Nuggets had last year, and you go out and you get someone who has the impact level of a Bruce Brown, or you go out and you trade, I mean, the Lakers have had KCP before, the Suns, you know, get somebody like that, and you've got more depth to your team, and you have a new coach, crazier things have happened. The Celtics, you know, with the second year of Joe Mazzulla, the Bucks, for that matter, their team's capable of taking aim at them. I'm sure the Warriors don't feel like they should be left out of that conversation either. There's absolutely teams capable of making a leap to kind of be on the same level as the Nuggets. The truth was, there wasn't anybody, or at least not that we got to see them play in the playoffs, that was on their level. And it's fair to say that I don't think it necessarily guarantees anything about next year for the Nuggets, but absolutely they're capable. I'm really curious to see what team has a quiet but impactful offseason the way the Nuggets had last year that can put them on the same level as the Nuggets. And, you know, we so often look at the major trades. I remember the day that the Bruce Brown stuff was announced, you know, via Woj tweet or whatever. I immediately thought that was a massive signing and a perfect signing for them, just because you could tell just his play as a cutter, as a ball handler when he needs to be, as a defender. Wow, that's going to be a perfect fit for them. Did I realize it was going to be a perfect fit to where it helps win them a championship? No, but it made perfect sense, as did the KCP trade. So, if there's another team anywhere near their level that makes deals like that, I think you're going to have to watch out for them. And also the thing that I don't want to say we've taken it for granted, one of the biggest things with this team and why they've been interesting even when Jamal Murray was hurt, when Porter was hurt, Nikola Jokic has been extremely, extremely healthy and durable for really, at this point, his whole career, but certainly over this span where you can
even think about him. He played 82 games after the bubble. Or not 82, but every game that year.
Right. I mean, he's been basically, I think he's been All-NBA five times. Like, basically that whole run, he's been as durable as just about anybody. And, you know, if at any point that's not true, all of a sudden he's so impactful. Again, I said without knowing anything else about this team, you would say that they're a contender to run it back and to win it again. If he's not as healthy, or if he's not healthy, or if he has a serious injury the way that most guys do at some point, then obviously the conversation shifts. So that's the biggest thing you have to be mindful of. I don't think it's a given, but that, you know, that's something that we've gotten spoiled with watching LeBron and Steph Curry, even after his injury run to start his career.
Yeah, Herring, you mentioned how not many people saw Bruce Brown being the championship piece for the Nuggets. I was one of the very few who did. Just want to float that out there. They were my preseason title pick. Everyone, I also called Bruce Brown the best move of the summer. So pretty incredible full circle professional moment for me last night, I guess you could say. I want to talk about the Miami Heat a tiny bit. Obviously, make it to the playoffs as an 8 seed via the play-in. Jimmy Butler, I think, is just like one of the greatest rounds in playoff history. First round against Milwaukee. They beat the Bucks in 5 games. Beat them with Giannis, beat them without Giannis. They come back, they beat a Knicks team in the second round. Their epic 7-gamer against the Celtics. Win 3, lose 3, win game 7 on the road with another great Jimmy performance in that game. We saw him struggle in this series a lot, though, especially I think that 5th game was kind of a microcosm of the series for Butler. He could get it going at some points, but it just wasn't enough. We saw Bam Adebayo, I think, 20-point games in every game this series. But again, second half of game 5, I think he had only 1 field goal and 2 points. Some people are like, were the Heat just a hot shooting team, a wacky team? I don't understand the point of that discussion. At the end of the day, like, just win playoff games. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, it's a make or miss league. Like, I'm getting tired of that being the end point of all playoff analysis. Like, the goal of the game is to make shots. Like, so sometimes teams are going to do it more than others. What I really want to ask you guys about the Heat is, where do they go from here? Do they treat this team like a team that made a finals berth, or do they also have to respect the fact that they won only 44 games in the regular season. Mannix, I'll start with you. Is this like a is this the summer where Pat Riley has to go all in around Jimmy and Bam, or do they still need to figure some things out?
I mean, there's never been a summer that Pat Riley has not tried to go all in. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, dating back to, you know, Shaq and the trade that acquired him 15, 20 years ago now. He's always looking to add pieces to the roster at the expense of draft picks and whatever else, you know, looms in the future. So, yeah, I expect Miami to once again go big game hunting, you know, whether that means a run at Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, whoever is available. I think Miami's going to try to find a way to squeeze that player onto the roster. It, as it always is with Miami, it gets complicated because you have to look at what they have to deal. Now, they have enough draft picks. They've got their own pick in this coming draft. They've got a few picks at the back end of this decade that they could deal. But, you know, who on that Miami roster is going to be the centerpiece of a potential deal? I mean, Tyler Hero is often talked about, but is Tyler Hero someone that, you know, gets teams excited about, you know, dealing a potential franchise player for? I mean, that's tricky to do a deal like that. But look, they're going to keep trying to build onto this and try to keep maximizing this window with Jimmy Butler. And even if they don't, like, you go into the playoffs next year, if Miami's still in that same place where they're like a 44-45 win team, like it is going to be next level to see the teams at the top of the bracket trying to avoid them in the first round. Like we're just going to be thinking the exact same thing. That like Miami just to get into the playoffs, Jimmy Butler decides to play, Bam Adebayo ratchets it up. The way they execute offensively with their discipline is going to be just a challenge in and of itself. They're going to be a tough out. You know, regardless of what happens this offseason, they've got some internal decisions this offseason. You've got Gabe Vincent, who's going to be a free agent. Max Strus is going to be a free agent. They've been very good kind of plugging in play guys, you know, into those spots, you know, with Strus and Vincent, you know, taking the place of others. Kyle Lowry is a year older. So they've got some internal decisions to kind of make. But, you know, they'll go out there and look for that next big star. And if they don't get him, they'll grind out the regular season. They won't care where they finish in the conference rankings. And when they get to the playoffs, they're going to consider themselves as good as any team in the conference. So I feel like it's a similar offseason for Miami as it's been for years past.
Herring, what about you? Do you think this team is closer to the one we saw in the playoffs or closer to the one we saw in the regular season?
I mean, I guess I'll say playoffs, just because regular season, you know, they were a team that barely even made the playoffs. And so when you're making it to the conference finals and winning them to get to the finals, you were one win shy of making the finals the year before that. It seems to suggest, and you made the finals during the bubble year, obviously, as well. It seems to suggest that that's kind of more the norm for you. Whether it looks that way or not, it's the truth. I do think making it to the finals without Tyler Hero should give them even less hesitation about trying to find a deal for him. Mannix raises the excellent point, which is like, okay, what team wants him and what are you going to get back for him? When you guys were having the conversation about whether this is a summer to go all in, and Mannix saying that he always tries to, or at least is looking to, I'm reminded of this tweet one time that Amin Alhassan ginned up about Rich Homie Quan and how essentially all his mixtapes are in order. I go in on every song, still going in, reloaded. I promise I will never stop going in. If you ever think I will stop going in, ask Royal Rich. I mean, this is kind of Pat Riley's MO. It rarely works from the standpoint of getting like a bona fide star. You know, ever since the LeBron years, essentially Jimmy Butler, they haven't really done much since. I wonder what it's weird because when you talk from the standpoint of your undrafted guys, that makes up more than half their roster. Although they are very, very, very good players and perfect within their roles, it's hard to consolidate anything into like a trade for a star necessarily. And Hero's contract makes that really difficult just because I don't think he and Jordan Poole are kind of in that same sweet spot, if you'd call it that, of like, sure, you hate having to play against them when they light you up, but you're not really sure whether you would want them on your team at that money because they're deficient on the other side of the ball for teams that play pretty good defense when those guys aren't on the court. So, of course, you want to do something. It's difficult for them from the standpoint, too, of the whole they wanted to maybe make a move for Donovan Mitchell, but they couldn't even do it last year because I think there's the rule involving him. Is it the Derrick Rose rule or whatever it is?
The extension rule's out the window now.
It is now, right. But it's just like, you know, they might have been more involved in other stuff before, but like you weren't going to trade Bam to do that. And so they've got a really interesting situation. I think Bam showed you something in this finals. I also think that this was a rare sort of opponent from the standpoint of the sort of drop defense that they play was part of the reason why it was unlikely for Miami to ever win the series to begin with is because if you're forcing Bam to be a 25-point scorer, sure, statistically it looks good. He was a huge impact player in the series, a star in the series, but that's also like not the way their team operates generally. When Bam is a guy that you're leaning on to get almost 30 points out of off of mid-range 18-footers, that's a really difficult series to try to win against a team that has that many offensive options. So I would expect them to try to do something. Pat Riley always is looking to try to do something. Also, Pat Riley's not a young buck at this point. He's closer to 80 years old at this point. I think he's 78. So I would imagine that he wants to try to, you know, this was as close as he's gotten, you know, in the last few years. But I would imagine he wants to really give it one last shot here somehow. And I would imagine that involves trading for a star. But I don't know who you get that puts you over the top so clearly in the East. They were fortunate to get there this time. They did it, and they deserve full credit for doing it. But would I bet on them again as an 8 seed to make this happen again? Like I would want them to have a better regular season so that it's not as difficult for them the whole way to climb this uphill battle again.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fascinating offseason. Mannix mentioned they're going to have to figure out what they want to do with Gabe Vincent and Max Strus, which is a perfect example of guys who were solid in the regular season, but were much better for large stretches of the playoffs, so that we saw Strus kind of struggle again in the finals. Same for Vincent. What do you do with contracts for those guys? What if other teams come in with crazy bids? Can you afford to lose them? I do think it's interesting. You look at guys like Duncan Robinson and Kyle Lowry. I think before the playoffs started, people talking about them as two of the more untradeable contracts in the league. But now after the playoffs, both look in a completely different light. I mean, Robinson was huge in the last two rounds of the playoffs when people thought he'd be unplayable. Lowry is now kind of an expiring deal, but you even saw him have some moments. I'm torn if the Heat need their version of, like, obviously they're going to be connected to Damian Lillard, if they need that trade or their version of the Aaron Gordon trade. Because since Jimmy Butler got to the team now, they're number one in the league in playoff wins. They were like neck and neck with Denver in terms of win percentage over the last 4 years, winning about 58% of their playoff games, which is very good. You know, they have the most finals appearances since Jimmy Butler joined the team in 2019. This is not like what really associate with this Heat era, but they have had a lot of postseason success. It feels like Jimmy and Bam are very close to being able to get it done as a duo. But I'm not even sure what the kind of right third piece is around them.
I think we have to look at too is that Jimmy Butler's gonna be 34 in September, and
he didn't
look like he had anything left in game five. I mean, he had that like 2 minute stretch where he knocked down a couple of threes, he went to the free throw line. I mean, he was electric, and he gave you the belief that, you know, he could help this team to the finish line. But for most of that game, his legs just didn't look like they were under him. And we know during the conference playoffs, they asked a lot out of Jimmy Butler. He delivered, but they asked a lot out of him. Can he do that again next year? We know, you know, he's going to be not a part-time player during the regular season, but he's not going to be this version of Jimmy Butler during the regular season. I think they have to take a similar approach with Kyle Lowry if he's back next year, where you've got to just kind of, you know, hate to use the phrase load manage, but you have to do that with him, you know, during the year to get him to this point. And even if you do, you know, are they going to be the kind of team that can beat back Milwaukee again, that can beat back Boston again? It's just asking a lot. You know, it was it was a perfect storm this year. Jimmy Butler played incredibly. Duncan Robinson stepped into a role he hadn't played in months and played incredibly. All the supporting players played well. Eric Spoelstra outcoached everybody, you know, during the playoffs. I just don't, you know, I'm with Herring there. If I was a betting man, I don't know if I'd bet on them being able to do it again. They're going to have to find a way to make in make it make a deal that upgrades them and gets them kind of into that top four in the Western Conference. They're not clawing their way through play-in tournaments and, you know, have home court advantage and try to do it that way, because this doing it this exact way again, you know, it's statistically improbable, to say the least.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'll just add to that. The Butler one is point is a salient one and will be very interesting, because one of the downsides that comes with playing so many playoff games as they had, they've almost had, a, you know, whatever, 66 now, I believe, over the last 4 years, that adds a whole another season on your body. And Jimmy was already a very high minutes guy for so much of his career. They're going to have to find a way to keep him fresh.
One thing that you said, you know, I think it's a really good question you raised from the standpoint of, like, do you have to go swinging for a Dame type, or can you kind of make this sort of in-between trade, really well-timed trade, like for an Aaron Gordon that the Nuggets made? I think the difference there is that for the Nuggets, offense comes relatively easily for them, and it just doesn't feel like that's the case for the Heat. Not that it doesn't feel like it, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. If they're shooting well, it comes more easily. When Tyler Hero is out there and has it rolling, it comes more easily for them. But even when they're humming, a lot of the times, like, their humming versus the Nuggets is just fundamentally different. And
yeah.
So I don't know that there's, like, a fourth scorer necessarily that you can plug into the Heat that makes them the best team in the league. I don't think that they probably need a guy that's a number two, at worst a number three, right behind Bam. That, you know, that's true. I guess Hero is their number two, but again, the way we are even talking about Hero is that, again, he's flawed mm-hmm. from the standpoint of, if you could upgrade him and get somebody else that has a higher upside than he does offensively, you know, I think you would do it if you could. And certainly if you could find a way to turn that into a Damian Lillard, I think you would try. I'm not sure they've got enough of what it takes to go get him. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do. It's not an enviable situation to be in, even though, again, they've been right on the doorstep now of titles, what, 3 of the last 4 years, from the standpoint of either being in the finals or one game away from the finals 3 times in the last 4 years. So that's hard to do, but I don't see exactly what the move is here. Mm-hmm. I won't ever bet against them from that standpoint, but I don't see what the move is off the top of my head.
they seem to somehow do their best work as a team on the court and a front office with their backs up against a wall. Somehow they're usually able to pull stuff out. And it'll be interesting to see if Riley has any rabbits left to pull out of the hat. Okay, I want to end with just 2 real quick questions. And I'll start with this one here. Herring, I'll go to you. Just give me one thing you're looking forward to playing out this offseason. What are you kind of most interested keeping an eye on? You know, the draft only a couple weeks away. We could see some movement starting that night, especially with Portland having the number 3 pick. So, Herring, I'll start with you. What are you keeping your eye on as we head toward the offseason?
There's a couple things. I think the point guard situation for a lot of these teams is going to be really mm-hmm. fascinating. You've got, first of all, the Irving situation and whatever the hell those reports have been on mm-hmm. that. We were just talking about Dame. Van Vliet just kind of said that he's going to opt out, which isn't a surprise. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul is another name that, you know, all of a sudden it's like wondering basically who's gonna run the team in Phoenix as the point guard is a massive question, and one that I think if you answer it correctly in your Phoenix might make them more compelling mm-hmm. in the title conversation for next year. They obviously have a good team. They need depth. They need more consistency out of that position. They need more health too. And I, you know, so if they move on from Chris Paul, it wouldn't be terribly surprising, but who are you replacing him with? Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested in that question. I think I'm also interested to see what happens directly behind the stuff with Wembanyama in the draft. Do the Blazers trade that pick? If they mm-hmm. don't, does that kind of essentially push Dame out the door? So, you know, again, I think it all still sort of comes back to a lot of the conversation around point guards and the way star point guards in this league are kind of going to shuffle a little bit this offseason.
Manix, what about you? Yeah, please.
Yeah, I would keep it exclusive to Damian Lillard because I think trading the pick for Portland would be a mistake. You know, some of the early reporting that I've seen has Charlotte leaning towards Brandon Miller at number two, in part because they already have LaMelo Ball at the point guard slot. I don't profess to be a draft expert, but I think that would be a mistake because I've seen a little bit of Brandon Miller, mostly towards the end of his season, and he's very good. I've seen more of Scoot Henderson, and I think he's really good. Like, I think he has the chance to be something special. And if he's on the board at number three, you can't trade that pick to get a player that'll inch you closer to playoff success. Because I just don't think there's a player that Portland can acquire that puts them on a championship level. Not during the 2 to 3 years we have of Damian Lillard playing at that championship level. And I think if you're the Blazers, if you're going to trade Damian Lillard, now may be your best and last time to do it because he's coming off a season where he was electric. You know, he is still an elite guy. His contract is big, but everybody's contract is big nowadays. I mean, the number of guys are going to be making, you know, $50, $60 million because it's going to grow significantly over the next couple of years. So it's not like that's this enormous albatross around the neck of teams if Damian Lillard gets banged up. I think this has got to be the year Portland makes a tough call and, you know, says we've done everything we can to do a deal with Lillard, but we're going to talk to Miami. We're going to talk to Brooklyn. We're going to talk to New York. We're going to talk to Philadelphia. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be more teams out there that are in the mix, but I feel like this is the year that Portland's got to find a way to make the tough decision and move off him because it's not fair to him really to kind of keep him around on a team that's not going anywhere. And for them, it's just time. Like it's time to hit the reset button. It's time to use that top three pick, which you know, the ping pong balls fell your way and get the next franchise player and try to build out that way. So, you know, Damian Lillard, if and when he's traded, can be landscape altering. Like if he goes to Philadelphia, you know, in a deal that involves, let's say, Tyrese Maxey and picks, Sixers with Embiid and Lillard, talk about two competitive guys playing at the highest level. That's difficult. If he winds up in New York, I mean, man, going from a small stage in Portland to a massive one in Madison Square Garden would be interesting to see, you know, for Lillard. He can be an impact player there. So he's the guy I'm watching in that situation that I'm going to watch the closest this offseason.
Yeah. All very interesting. I'll just add the Golden State Warriors to the mix. We already saw Bob Myers leave, the architect of their championship teams. Draymond Green has his player option. What's going to happen with Draymond Green? Is this kind of the beginning of the end? Are they going to still try to build around their core three of Steph, Dre, and Clay? You know, Clay's extension eligible. I'm not expecting a new deal for him this summer, but the Draymond thing is going to be really interesting because Bob Myers was a big advocate for him, someone who he was really close to in that front office. Now he's gone. Draymond has said what happened with Bob Myers would have an impact on his free agency decision. So very curious to see what the Warriors come back looking like next year because I do think they are, in many ways, Steph to me is the most interesting threat to the Nuggets. And then I'll just end here. I want to end with a question on Denver only because, hey, they are the champions. It was such a fantastic run. Manix, I'll start with you this time. What will you remember the most about this Nuggets team? What kind of stands out to you about them when you put them in the context of recent champions?
I just think what stands out is how they were able to take their game to another level in the playoffs. I mean, nobody pushed this team further than six games. You know, Jokic clobbering that Wilt Chamberlain triple-double mark for a postseason. Jamal Murray, you know, he finished the finals averaging 20-plus points and 10-plus assists. The only other guys to do that are Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and LeBron James. So he entered a different stratosphere. Porter Jr. struggled in the finals, but you know, this team wouldn't be here if he wasn't the player he was, you know, during the conference playoffs. Aaron Gordon, you know, continuing to, you know, slide into that new role and being incredibly effective in it. I mean, you know, kids watching basketball coming up should look at Aaron Gordon's play in the finals as an example of how to be, you know, how being a role player is cool and how being a role player can be impactful. What did Aaron Gordon do in this series? He defended and he cut and he took advantage of mismatches. Like, you know, that's basketball 101. And I think his ability to do that, you know, was remarkable. So really just how, you know, Miami on the Eastern Conference side took its game to another level, obviously, but Denver, even as the number one seed, were able to elevate their games to a different level to get them there.
Yeah, I think for me, it's some of what Mannix got into earlier, just the stories behind this team between whether it's Murray and kind of the stick-to-itiveness to come back from his injury. If it's Porter and his, what does he have, three back surgeries at this point? I think about Jokic in the start of his career. He always had talent, but if you go back far enough, you had people in Denver and fans and stuff like that that wondered, were they making maybe the wrong call as far as him versus Nurkic when they both were on the same team, which is, you know, a little bit strange to look back at now, but he was, you know, Jokic for a while. People said to him for years and said about him for years on Twitter, everywhere else, he needs to lose weight. And, you know, that's been said about other players. It's been said about Doncic and other guys. And Jokic did it and has basically been the size that he is ever since. And has been a guy that no matter how long the guy plays for, he makes an impact. He's been one of the healthiest superstars in the league. He's gotten better every year, despite the fact that he's basically the most efficient player in the game. This was the most efficient season of his career, which, looking back on it, when we talk about MVPs and stuff like that, there were some people that were saying in the moment, not, I'm guilty of not having voted for him this year, whereas I did last year. But they're, you know, the same way that people look back on certain years and they're like, how did this guy not win the MVP? This one's going to be one of those cases that people look back on. Like, we can already say that, given the way that this postseason run was. He perseveres, and he just fights, and he keeps fighting, and he stays with it. So I just think it's a complete team. It's a story of not just giving up when it would be easy to. It would be easy to let go of a coach when you have this many 45-win seasons in a row without even making it to the finals. Instead, they stuck to it and they took the hard route and they got it done. And now we're talking about the potential of a dynasty. And I my column today on Sports Illustrated was just about how all that stuff changes in an instant. This was a work in progress for 7-8 years for this organization. But now, all of a sudden, instead of talking about Jokic and like whether he deserves any of the MVPs he's gotten, the idea that like he probably should have had this one too, and the idea that, you know, for a team that couldn't get it done, had never won anything in their franchise history, now all of a sudden we're talking about a potential dynasty. And it all changes so quickly, so simply, but it was because they stuck with this for as long as they did, and they made so many of the right calls, and they deserve all the credit in the world for that.
Yeah, I'll just say I think what impressed me the most about the Nuggets is they just had an answer for everything this year, and that is, to me, the hallmark of a great champion, a hallmark of a great playoff team especially. You know, you think about the Heat series alone. It's like, okay, you want to go zone. We're going to offensive rebound you to death. We're going to put Jokic at the elbow, make you defend him with guards. You are going to try to blitz Jamal Murray. Okay, we're going to kill you with baseline cuts once your defense tries to scramble. You know, defensively, it's like you're going to keep going at Jokic. Like, we are going to keep adjusting his depth in the pick and roll and make you guys take tough shots. We're going to stick to your shooters on the perimeter in a way that we didn't in the first few games of the series. Just everything that was thrown their way, they had an answer for it. They won defensive battles. They won shootouts against the Suns when Devin Booker looked like he was never going to miss again. They just had an answer for everything. And I think Jokic individually had an answer for every narrative that was out there about him as a player in terms of couldn't defend. I thought he was the best conditioned player in the playoffs. You know, running up and down the floor in altitude, pushing the ball all the time. You know, outside of the very brief ankle roll in game four, never looking like he was hurt. Just, he had an answer for every single thing his critics would say he couldn't do in the playoffs. And I understand the people who needed to see it, you know, the people who needed to see it on the biggest stage. And it just felt like Jokic had an answer for every single one of those narratives. So it's just an incredible run. It's a fun team. I think it's good for the NBA when teams like this win. It just, it gives other mid markets and smaller markets hope, I think, that they can maybe one day pull off a similar route. That will do it for this episode of The Crossover, though. You know, as everyone knows, things don't really slow down in the NBA. The NBA draft is coming up very soon.
Ja's going to get suspended forever coming up.
We have the Ja Morant suspension tease.
Our Twitter friend Josiah Johnston had the tweet of the night when he had some meme up there about Ja Morant waiting to get suspended. I wonder how long. Like, I'm going to imagine Adam Silver gives it a couple of days, but it is that's like,
bruh,
you know, that's when the news cycle, the Nuggets news cycle breaks. It, like, all the attention goes from Denver, what it did, and bam, it's on Ja Morant.
Part of me thinks that storyline is like going to be bigger for people than the Nuggets winning, which is I won't say it's sad, because I also think there's a lot more that goes into Ja's thing and just he, you know. All the stuff that people have said about Jokic and a lack of marketability, or like Ja has been marketed heavily, and it was just starting to happen. So now that this is upon us, it's going to get a ton of attention. Yeah. I'm slightly confused that that the league chose to handle it this way, and that
really
look, I understand that Adam Silver was doing the media rounds he always does during the playoffs and during the finals. It always happens, but to basically leave it as just this thing that's just going to hover until after it's just, because of that, it's all we're talking about. Whereas it could have been over before this.
No, I think he did the right thing, because what was it? He said before game one, they basically knew what they were going to do. If he had announced between games one and game two, for 3 or 4 days, that's all anyone would have been talking about. You flip on ESPN and it would have been too harsh, too light. What do the Grizzlies do? Does Ja Morant, should he stay in Memphis? Like, it would have been, that would have dominated this news cycle. It just would have.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. I just think that it also would have been over by the time before the finals had ended. And now,
maybe,
if you want to stay in the news cycle, and also maybe they wanted to stay in the news cycle because they're going to drop the hammer. And if that's the...
No, I don't think so. I think if they could snap their fingers and make everybody stop talking about it after a day, they would. They were just looking for it. Look, they don't.
Then don't do it during the off season. That's my whole point. Because now the off season, that's all we have to talk about.
They were trying to do, like, they didn't. There's so much attention on how, look, it's not Celtics and Lakers and all. Everybody talking about, you know, smaller market teams in the finals. You drop a bomb like a Ja Morant suspension, and it overshadows the games, and that's a nightmare for the NBA.
From the small market standpoint, that's very fair.
There's no stopping this from becoming a massive story. Everything Ja Morant does at this point is is just oxygen consuming in the NBA media sphere.
I still think it's going to be 50 plus. I really do. I'll
make my prediction. Like, I've heard neighborhood of 30. Is the number that I've heard.
Wow. From NBA types. That would be low from where I sit. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, Adam Silver, and we don't need to go off on this, but Adam Silver, look, he's been involving the players' union every step of the way in this process, which tells me whatever comes down, it's going to be an agreed upon, not that it has to be, but it will be an agreed upon number. So that suggests to me it might be a little lower than some people are anticipating. But, you know, I think 30 to 35 is going to be my prediction for this suspension.
Okay. Wow. That would surprise me. But, you're right. And it does seem – I don't know. I think even the idea of that whole – I don't know, growing up, if you hear that story, if you hear that voice from your parents saying, you're going to get it when you come home, this was kind of what that felt like. And the idea makes it seem maybe more ominous than what it'll ultimately be. It's not to say 30 games is nothing, but it really was sounding like, oh, you crossed us the first time when you sat here, stared me in my face and said, you understood and you took accountability, and now you're going to do it right now, you know, during the playoffs, you're going to embarrass us like this. Oh, no, no, no. We're going to come after you this time. That was the impression I was getting that I think a lot of us kind of felt like we were hearing from Adam Silver. But we also haven't seen him have to do this at all. So there's really not much precedent for it from him specifically, not David Stern. If it was David Stern, I feel like we would be seeing 50-plus. And I thought maybe that he was going to invoke his ghost for this punishment, but maybe not. If it's 30, then he's not.
Here I was thinking we'd just end the podcast on a light, uplifting note. Oh, at the Denver Nuggets, nope. And you guys are just like, here's nine minutes of John Morant. Suspension.
I'll never stop going in.
Yeah. On that note, thank you guys. As I said, we'll be right back. I'm sure it'll be a busy offseason, at least through free agency. Thank you to everyone for listening all season, and we will be back soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.